sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys Horror Movie Podcast. I am Rolando.
And I'm Johnny. That's something I made up. I want to put it in a movie.
You should. It's catchy.
Yeah. I've tried to scrub through like history from like the 50s on. Nobody's ever said like, here's Johnny or something like that, you know?
Unrelated. I got a piece of mail from Eddie McMahon. And I could be a millionaire.
Oh, man. I would be so happy to hear that that's been still going on. It's just nobody talks about it.
But what is he famous for? I forget what he's famous for. But
McMahon. Sports, right?
Yeah. He has all those football games, NFL football games. What is it?
Yeah. Game show announcer. Interesting.
Oh. It's probably never heard of it. No. Is it like win, lose, or draw, or?
No, bone cancer. He did die of bone cancer. So this is our Ed McMahon portion of the Ed McMahon was in the Marines, I think.
Did you ever see that?
He was a pilot during World War II.
Ah, okay. Flags of Our Father.
And he sold vegetable slices in Atlantic City's boardwalk. I guess he's the guy that invented the mandolin. I'm just kidding.
The food processor. He's that guy.
Who Do You Trust is one that he did.
Oh, never seen it.
I don't know.
Did you ever see that thing where at the end of the episode, Johnny Carson's like, oh, and have a good night. And they cut to the guests talking with everybody. And Epic Man is doing like a bump off his hand. And they totally caught it. He had a terrible coke problem, allegedly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he fought in the war.
Maybe he just had the sniffles.
Yeah, we did a bump off his head. Everybody does that. We have to sniff. What are we doing?
we need to talk about Fatima getting away with murder, literally.
But let's welcome everybody to the show, because this week we are reviewing The Substance. And you, John, are going to give us the plot in 5 words, and then we'll give our first thoughts, deep spoiler analysis. But now we can go back to TV Corner and review season 3, episode 8, Thresholds. Do you want to? I'm going to go out and just say this really quick. I think I'm officially like I think this show is like completely lost me. This is the episode that broke me.
The episode, I gotta say, feels pretty monotonous.
Uh-huh.
And then like the last 15 minutes, which mind you, like these episodes sometimes are like upwards of like 50 minutes long, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the last 15 minutes, I'm like, if the show is more like this all the time and not so much filler, I would like the show a lot more.
I did not really like this episode whatsoever, and am completely like, I'm usually very like invested, and I know all the stories and stuff, and I did not like any of the turns in this episode. I hated all of them. They're terrible, because it's like you have Victor, who's supposedly trying to get Jasper to talk for like 2 episodes. Supposedly that was going to be important. but it wasn't important at all. It's just a, oh, I just misremembered something. It was actually the kid in white. He keeps looking older and older.
Is he, episode. Yeah, well, I was going to ask, like, is he alive in this memory or is he a ghost also again? That's where the confusion came in. We briefly talked about it before where I'm thinking the reason Victor's mom didn't survive anything was because she wasn't actually chosen to do these things. But she could also still be chosen. Miranda? Is that her name?
Well, something like that, yes. I don't remember it offhand. They have said it before, but I I would have to think that she may, just based on the fact that
the drawings
and stuff, and that she kind of invented the bottle tree and stuff like that. She put all those bottles with the, you said it earlier, was it faraway trees? Something like that?
Faraway trees, yeah.
I think...
because it's just that one part, that part of the conversation confused me. So if this little kid in white, the one that's kind of leading everybody to figure things out, is talking to this guy and not her, and Victor just had to relay all the information he learned, so she did all these things. Like, are we about to learn that she didn't actually draw all these things either? It was always Victor, or like, you know.
Well, that's I think you bring up part of my problem with the show is that, like, there's like no, like, it's just one question after one question, right? Like, I'm still waiting for them to come back around and Boyd catch one of these. Wasn't that supposed to be a big push for this year, was that he was going to catch one of them?
Yeah.
Instead, we're, I think, treading water, and we're just like rehashing old things, and they've introduced a new concept, right? Like time travel now. And that's just like, that's a headache now too. That I don't know.
Yeah, because she, what's her name? Julie, right?
Right. Yeah, Julie. They just play really fast and loose with like who Martin is, which is the guy that's tied up, right? It's the character's name.
Yeah.
She supposedly went back in time and was the one.
She's the reason Boyd, yeah, got out of that canal.
That he,
not canal. What do you call it?
The well. The well, yeah. I feel like that's one of those things where like the writers were so ingrained in their story, like they know that, but the audience doesn't know that. That was not a particularly like memorable moment of the show that needed more explanation. Does that kind of track?
I mean, I do remember being, I had a bunch of questions when that happened. Because when Boyd climbed out of the well, I was like, who the fuck threw the rope down if this Martin's chained up to the wall?
Right.
And then when he released Martin from the wall, that's when Martin gave him the squirmy wormies into his blood.
Yeah, and he, if I remember correctly, like Martin knew his wife, but not Boyd. That's weird, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
So what you're saying is what I've been saying for the past three seasons. Just kill
the Donna is the problem.
Donna's character's taken a really weird turn for me personally. I know she's like kind of broken, but it's just a hard opposite, like polar opposite of her gaslighting nature.
Gaslight. Yeah. Red flag, toxic gaslighting nature.
Kinda, yeah. Like every single time. And she was the one that said, like, hey, you got a miracle. You gotta give birth to this baby. You gotta give birth to this baby.
I feel like they are this show so far. I think what I'm having problems with the show is that they are just trying to add so many layers of story and really kind of over explain like the mythology of the show and what this place is, that they're kind of losing sight of what I think one of the strengths of the show is where they just have, they focus on the characters and them trying to survive and exist at this place, we're not getting any of those stories anymore. We're getting stuff that's like really, really like heavy mythology, supernatural elements of the show. Like they're leaning into them, which is why like Donna is not really a part of this season very much. And a lot of the her, you know, characters that don't normally deal with these things are not being featured as much.
Oh, is that why your new favorite character is that? What's her name? The cop.
The cop, yeah.
Also, doesn't have like. Why does everybody have? Hopefully, I'm not going to offend anybody. But this show feels like it's written by. Because it kind of reminds me of the writing of a professor that we had once, who would hear like Mexican names, like, "Oh, that's beautiful. Let's give everybody Mexican names." I'm like, "These are white people, though." You know, like that sort of thing.
Right.
What's her name? The cop.
Acosta.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying. Like, why is her name Acosta?
I think they have completely. I've noticed that they completely telegraphed what they're doing with that character, meaning like she's clearly are setting up that the town is going to turn on Boyd and she is a cop, right?
Yeah.
She already had a scene with Kenny. Kenny's always been like a deputy or whatever. Almost seems like, especially now that with Ellis and Fatmia thing happening,
yeah, she's gonna want to kill Fatima,
right? And not only that, but she's gonna rat him out because she was told about them and feels kind of betrayed that they didn't come to her sooner. And not only that, but she mentions that people are turning on Boyd, and Boyd has had several moments where he's kind of like got into arguments with some of the characters, so it's like Boyd is probably, I'm assuming by the end of the season, not going to be like solely responsible for this town, which who knows what would happen.
You think there's going to be like a third faction?
There's going to be just like a mutiny of taking his power away, basically. Yeah. Especially with like, and I think this Ellis and I don't know. I kind of feel like the baby is going to be born this year, but.
Yeah, probably.
But whatever that means, that to me is actually the thing that I like the least, because I'm unconvinced about what's the kid's name? Oh my god, blanking on his name, Elgin. I'm completely unconvinced about this turn that he did. Like, why is he so easily been persuaded to help the kimono woman? That I don't understand this turn. It just seems like he's like kidnapping people and he's like draining his blood and then he's like listening to her.
And the assumption is like this is the kimono lady's baby, right?
Yes. That's the assumption I would say.
Which is so weird that Elgin's like, "No, I mean, it's not your baby." I'm like, "All right, Elgin." He's all like, "Your body, my choice."
Yeah. Clearly he's the Trump stand-in here. And like I think they've made a mess of that story and they've raised stakes for it that don't really seem convincing, like
man, that was a
timely
was
humor.
The internet totally didn't crash and we were doing a laugh in to restart the recording.
Definitely not. Anything else you want to talk about, from?
I hear you. It's getting a little too convoluted everywhere, so I feel like the stories are getting spread real thin at this point. Like, just end one of them, I feel like.
Right, and...
Unless there's going to be, like, an epic, like, oh, all these things connect, which would probably annoy me more than anything.
Yeah, I don't trust that they have. I think we're seeing, like, probably overarching things they want to tell about the show.
Yeah.
And there's like things that are happening this season only. Which I think the only thing thing I'll bring up is the Matthews family, about how there's parallels between Henry and the dad we don't like, Jim. Is it Jim? Jim.
Robert Joy's character, right?
Robert?
No, oh, Jim. Jim, the... Yes.
Yes, yeah. And
the Matthews family.
The Matthews family, yeah. So, yeah, it just seems like they're trying to make that parallel, and looks like Henry has, like, a drinking problem, which is pretty evident. Jim is kind of being a bad father. Yeah, this is probably one of the more tedious, least interesting one of the group.
I just hate that, even though I don't like them, I hate that Jim gets shit on more than Tabitha. Like, they're equally both shitty parents.
Right. Right.
Like, yeah. Tabitha's like, I'm going to save the day, so I'm going to not tell my family.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking bounce. I'm like, dude, you suck too. They both suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not liking the direction. I don't have confidence about these last two episodes of the season. What are you feeling?
I'm sure we'll get something that'll keep us hooked.
Yeah.
But I feel like we gotta chalk this up to this show is gonna be a lot like Lost, and don't expect them to get out of this situation any season soon.
Again, I'm not taking Lost slander here. I'm a Losty from way back. That's okay if you don't like the show, but the argument I don't like is that, oh, nothing is ever resolved. Everything's keeps being drawn out, which is not true.
No. Did you tell me Lost had two seasons and it was over?
Huh?
That's what I'm trying to say. That I'm saying, like, this show is, like, leading that trajectory of, like, we can't expect any of them to get out of this situation anytime soon. I think they're, like, really planning for, like, three more seasons or something, because they keep introducing more shit.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like last... I think I brought this up on the previous episode where I didn't like that they're rehashing the shit from last season. I thought that was... I thought Boyd resolved that, and that we were going to spin off and do something different. And it just seems like we're going in circles now, because we're literally replaying the same story, and we're not... They haven't really added any new wrinkles to it. It's just a rehash of the same thing.
Yeah. Except for, yeah, now Elgin is...
Weird turn. He's bad. Yeah, like that makes literally no sense that his character would have that sort of dramatic twist where he's like kidnapping other characters now and completely on the side of the kimono woman. That makes no sense whatsoever. He's been terrified of this thing for like two seasons. Why is he trusting it now? What power does it have? And does any of this really tie to back to the Martin thing and what they did with last season? And what's the end game there? Like, the only thing I can think of is that this baby's born and Boyd takes the baby, because Boyd did say he was going to get one of them. But that's assuming... But that's assuming that the baby that they have is one of them. But we don't know. It's going to be the ghost baby, kimono woman. Like, so is the kimono woman part of the ghost thing? Like, it makes no sense, dude. It's just so out there. There's too many things going on.
I think it's probably going to be born a boy. And Boyd will take it because he said he's going to say, like, at least this will be a real son, Ellis. Gender fluid name. That's where the show takes a weird turn, where Boyd is like ultra like conservative values,
and it goes back to the whole idea that like this show going in circles, meaning like Tabitha got out last season. It was like a big fucking deal. She got out. Three episodes in, she's fucking where exactly where she was before. She's doing exactly the same thing. So what the fuck was the point of all that? Just to bring in Henry? That's kind of the only thing that's happened.
Yeah, it felt kind of dumb. And then she called her mom, so I thought something was going to happen there, but I guess not.
No, nothing.
I don't know.
Yeah,
she made a lot of really stupid decisions. Like, I'm going to borrow somebody's phone. I'm not going to contact anybody I know.
Right.
and I have Victor's lunchbox.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm telling you, dude, I think they just wrote themselves into a corner and then quickly undid everything in the beginning of the season, which is, that's something Lost would never do.
I think that the show From is going to turn into, it's like a social experiment where they're like, we're going to put together some of the dumbest fucking Americans we can find. And let's just see what happens. We're going to put in one smart guy and one smart woman. And they're going to break early on because of how stupid everybody is.
It's true. So you're saying Ethan is the key to everything. The little annoying boy is...
Little boy, yeah. I feel like we need a sacrifice. I'm gonna get fucking picked off by the CIA because I keep wanting this kid to die. He's just kidding. They don't care.
Nobody cares about these kids. But yeah. I'm up. I'm quickly losing stock on this show, man. These last 2-3 episodes have been kind of rough in retrospect because nothing's going on and they just keep adding and adding and not solving anything. And the thing is, like, what we really should be talking about, I think, is the revelation that the Inkui kids are the trees.
Oh, right. That's right.
That's the big revelation, but it was so, like, just an afterthought with all this other shit going on that nobody really makes heads or tails of it, you know?
I just want there to be, like, at least, like, one or two characters that are just goofy. Like, one guy is going, like, he travels with them, and they're like, these are the faraway trees. And like, yeah, these are the faraway trees. Like, why do you call them that? Because they do this and that. I'm like, oh, I've been shitting in these for, like, months now. Because there's a hole in them. So I took... And I've been wondering, I used to like them because I was like, I think the earth is just swallowing up my poop because every time I look, it's gone. I don't know. Interesting.
Interesting, Jim. I've been shitting it for some reason. He's friends with Jim. So they need like a Hugo Reyes.
Yeah. Something. I don't know.
Yeah.
They need Pete Holmes.
It's just there.
We need Jonah Ray on this show. That's what we need,
yeah. All right. Two more episodes left. It seems like, based on just the titles, that it's going to be like a two-parter thing. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm not even sure if that's necessary. This whole thing seems to be like a 80-part thing to once.
It's pretty flimsy all around, this whole thing. So, yeah.
Some of the top reviews of this episode were, are we still watching From? Or...
Yeah.
Somebody's like, every time I watch this episode every week, now I feel like I'm pissing away an hour. I'm like, kinda, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's feeling very season two of Yellow Jackets.
Yeah. There was on IMDb, there was, let's see, there was a total of 1,300 reviews, and not all of those are my burner accounts.
Oh shit!
So I made that joke earlier. I'm making it again. So,
because we know the joke is the other half are my burner.
There you go. Yeah, we don't like uneven numbers. So 1,300.
And in unrelated news that nobody at home can see, I took a different little profile picture for my thing. If you can look at it real quick.
For it's what? Like
top right for Riverside.
Where? I don't.
It's right next to my username. Not in my big thing, but the
people.
No, never mind.
I don't know how to run in this. This program. I think it looks different from my side. That's what I'm surmising. Mine's very clean. It just has the two video images. And
oh, yeah. I keep everything open.
Okay, good. Well, all right. That's good info.
That's how our waning interest in the show is turned into me talking about something only we can see.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go move over to our main review of The Substance. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
2024's The Substance. A thoughtful opinion on society. It's a Brian Yuzna, or what's his name, joke?
Yep, Brian Yuzna, yeah. Yuzna? Yuzna, yeah. Fan favorite here.
Coming in at number 2, The Substance. Alex Winter's Freaked Got Sequel.
Yeah, I know.
And coming in at number 1 for The Substance, a little political humor. FDA regulations according to RFK.
Nice. Yeah. That, bookmark that, because that's going to be, it's going to somehow come magically true by the end, sometime this year, next year. All right. The Substance, probably one of the most talked about movies, not only probably in horror, but just in general, because of Demi Moore and its sort of its topic, Margaret Qualley, and its topic about aging movie stars. What'd you think, John?
I liked it a lot, and I heard a lot of people tell me that I need to watch it because it was, you know, fantastic film. I feel like it was probably a little too long.
Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at with overall. Like, I feel like I would have enjoyed it a lot more if they shaved off like half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of it felt a little unnecessary, even though, nothing against Margaret Qualley, or what? How do you say her name?
That's Margaret Qualley is correct, I think.
Okay. She was great, but I was just like, I want to see more Demi Moore decrepit and her fucking losing it.
So you want less Margaret Qualley crotch shots and upper thigh shots.
I did enjoy all that shit because I was like, this is like one long fucking Benny Benassi music video. Right? That's his name, right? The guy that had the push me until I get my satisfaction.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Because even the score sounded like that song.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's a movie that is very, like, sort of lays out its themes very well and plays them out pretty matter-of-factly. Like, once you kind of get the idea of a, you know, fading celebrity taking a drug to create, you know, a younger version of herself, like, that's it. That's the whole movie. And of course, it just talks about getting old and what that might mean, and like what sort of person would be attracted to this, and it's very vain and superficial.
Yeah, because at the core, she is not a good person.
Right, she says this much.
There's nothing. Yeah, she's not evil. It's just
she says that she's
self-absorbed.
Right.
Yeah. Like. Yeah.
And you know that I'm not really like a body horror guy or like really kind of a violent guy, though. I thought everything was kind of nicely done.
It was cool, yeah.
Yeah.
It was tasteful, I would say. Yeah, even though it's gross. Like, that tail end, which I was half expecting something like that to happen, but not to that scale. It was very, well, we'll talk about that later, I guess. But yeah, I mean, again, I really enjoyed the movie. I just felt like there was too much of the middle. Like, that second act was too long.
Like, trim it down. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be like this. It's satirical. Like, everything is satirical, right? It's satire, right? Because everything's supposed to be really heightened and really like showing you the sort of shiny, sort of like superficial side of like Hollywood and celebrity and beauty and how that's all temporary. And I think what I'm kind of getting from what you're saying is that like Demi Moore kind of was like the best part of this movie. She like easily steals this movie because I honestly liked her story a little better than
Margaret Qualley's.
Margaret Qualley, yeah.
And she didn't, like, again, she didn't do a bad job at all. She was great. It's just her character was like a, might as well have been like a robot version of Demi Moore because it was just there for one purpose, to be famous.
Right. I think they talk a lot about, and of course, I think this is a very like brave performance by Demi Moore because, I mean, they just show everything and she's what, like 60? And
still smoking hot, by the way, but yeah.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I know the point of the movie is not to objectify, but I was like, she's beautiful, and I get that that's the point, too. Mm-hmm. Like, she had no reason to do this.
Right, yeah, and it's a very brave, very, like, just shows why she's probably has been one of the most, like, important actresses we've had over the last, what, like, 30 years, 40 years, almost, in Hollywood? She's
fantastic.
Yeah. And it's great to kind of see her now that she's older, kind of return, and it's just all the charisma, the power. It's kind of, she almost has that like Tom Cruise thing where it's like they just have this sort of like star quality to them,
watchability. Yeah,
yeah.
Like I had to explain it. Yeah,
which I'm and not to like, you know, lessen Margaret Qualley, but it just seemed like because she's doing great stuff too. You know,
yeah.
I kind of want to almost say every role I've seen her in has been slightly different. She's never really played. She's always kind of getting lost in character work and stuff.
Yeah.
So she's a really good actress. I'd have to agree because I was still, despite all that, despite like, I feel like understanding the movie, I was still left a little cold by it. I don't know where the disconnect is.
I don't know. Cause it was an engaging film. Again, I liked it, but yeah, I'm right there with you. There was something about it where I'm like, again, maybe I just thought it was too long, or I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of ready for the film to be over before it was over.
It almost seems like this movie's kind of done in three acts, right? Like, because they have like three specific title cards, and then, yeah, it just seems like it's a little slow paced, but I think they want to show you Margaret Qualley side, meaning the new starlet, hot, sexy young starlet startup. They want to show you all those things to show you how, like, I think I want to say, like, they show you those things, but none of it is really, like,
that exciting.
That exciting? Because it's,
yeah.
I mean, everybody, I think anybody who's, like, everybody kind of understands what's going on, right? Like that it's, you know, they're taking advantage, exploiting beauty, right? And then they're making the classic, like, almost known thing about Hollywood about how there's like massive sexism between a woman's age and a man's age. And
which, by the way, I could not gauge where this was supposed to take place. They don't actually mention it.
Mm-hmm.
They give it like very Hollywood-esque types of names and stuff. But the movie lost me when there's like a long shot of Demi Moore's character's name is Elizabeth Sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets like a Walk of Fame star sort of deal, kind of. Mm-hmm. And then like over the years she's just becoming lost. And then it snows. So I'm like, okay, it's not Hollywood. I have no idea where this is at.
Well, I also feel like the idea that she was like some sort of fitness instructor was kind of lost. That's not very relatable. That's like a 80s Jane Fonda thing, right? Like Suzanne Summers Thigh Master reference.
This was giving me like, I was half expecting what's her name? Mia Goth is Maxine to pop out of her back. Because it felt very like that movie sometimes.
Why don't you like me? That's why Mia got.
So we're saying, let's remake this movie with
Mia Goth. There you go.
Both old and young.
I think she. Yeah, the movie's called Pearl. Whatever. Pearl Maxi. But yeah, it's essentially that very kind of classic tale of you know, being exploitive, and I guess I do appreciate, though I don't think they're saying anything revolutionary, and I don't know if that was the intention, but I think making the distinction that, like, how old, you know, Dennis Quaid looks in this and how gross he is eating shrimp. Yeah. Versus how Demi Moore is treated, like, this is the end of your career, how his career is not really questioned, it's just sort of continuing no matter what his age is, and Elizabeth seems to feel like hers is winding down because she's reached 50, even though it's funny because Demi Moore is actually 60. So yeah, she's older than the character she's playing, but I don't know. It's
like the substance part of it, the whole body horror thing where, mm-hmm. So I guess we should explain, and it's real fast and loose on what this stuff is, because that's
right. It's,
I kind of like that part that they don't explain. It's just like a voice on the phone and she gets an address. She gets mailed a key card and she's like subject 503 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to know how this stuff works because they basically show you at the beginning there's like a weird cold open where they inject an egg yolk.
It splits.
And the yolk separates into two yolks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I get this. There's no trying to figure this out. It's very quick. But then, yeah, she takes this stuff. Her younger, prettier self pops out of her back.
Mm-hmm. Then she has to stay. She can only stay young for 7 days.
Yes. And you find out later. Is this a spoiler? Not really. You find out later it's because the fluid in the spine needs to, like, refresh itself for 7 days.
Yeah. So like, in essence, like, Sue needs to kind of. Elizabeth is, like, the main source of her.
Like, you could call it, like, she's like the Matrix.
She's Jada Pinkett Smith. No, she's
no, she's good.
Oh, okay.
don't slap me.
But yeah, like, essentially, yes, that Sue is like born of her. So, but Elizabeth is kind of like the main thing that keeps essentially both of them alive, even though they make it very clear that they both need each other. That one can't abuse the other because then things happen.
And that they are the same person, but it doesn't play out that way so much.
Well, see, that's where I think they should have done. Somebody mentioned this, and I thought it was a great idea, that instead of, they should have Margaret Qualley and who's her mother? Andie McDowell, right?
Oh, yeah.
They should have just done Andie McDowell. And he would have been like, oh, that would have been a believable younger version. But then, thinking about it, it kind of that would have been cool, right? But it's not about, it would have been like, it's better that it's different.
It's the story problem.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't fix a lot of, for one, it doesn't fix the story problems, but also it helps that it's somebody that doesn't look like Elizabeth, because then you're just going to think like, yeah, oh, that's her daughter, that's her whatever, because they look exactly the same.
Because it's supposed to be an improved version of herself as well.
Right.
Like a perfect version.
Once somebody, I don't know why this didn't occur to me, but once I read that somebody compared it to the Dorian Gray story, I'm like, ah, yes, that's exactly what it is. Because she eventually, like, she's essentially, one is kind of being hidden while the other one walks freely and stuff like that. Is a younger version of her, which is...
I think what they needed to do also was probably make it like something went wrong in the process.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. I felt like it was a little far-fetched that the other version was trying to stay around longer than they should have without understanding the consequence, right? You know, like if they care that much about fame, they wouldn't try to mess that up.
Mm-hmm.
Because even there's like a nurse that at the beginning of the film, she's also watching as her billboard, Demi Moore, sorry, as Elizabeth Sparkle's billboard is being torn down, and she's not paying attention, and she gets T-boned and gets in a rollover crash. And again, I think another thing that was important to note is she doesn't get hurt at all, but it's her birthday, and she got fired, and she feels ugly, and she's going to leave the hospital, and I think the nurse, a somewhat attractive man, look kind of plastic.
Noticeably, anyway, yeah.
Is like, oh, one more procedure, and she's like, I thought he said I could go, and he checks her spine, and he's like, you're perfect candidate. I mean, no, you're good to go. And then I think at that point where it's like, oh, she is perfect for this sort of thing. I feel like all the symbolism and like everything you're supposed to read into is so on the nose by that point on.
Yeah.
Like there's a part at the end too where she literally gets washed away. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what you're getting at is kind of like when her 7 days is up, Margot Qualley's Sue's character is up, and then we spend time and Lisbeth comes back and yep. She feels like she starts behaving kind of like how old people, you assume old people start behaving. They become, you know, lonely. They're at home all the time. You know what I mean? They don't go out. They have no friends and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, in essence, she's kind of feels at that moment like she's trapped. And that Sue's really kind of like her only positive thing that's happened to her. So,
oh, which I mean, there is that sad part where like she runs into somebody. Oh, yeah. This guy recognizes mm-hmm. her, and he's like, "We had 10th grade together. I mean, we're older now. You're so fantastic." And he's not a traditionally attractive guy, right? Like he's
normal,
balding. He's got a comb over, and. He's like, oh, we should go like catch up, get a drink, we're reconnected. And she's like, oh, I don't know. He's like, I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. Like he was being very sincere about the whole thing. Mm-hmm.
Does she?
And then after,
oh no, I was gonna say he's actually attracted to her even at her age. He's not worried about like.
Oh yeah, he's very like, oh my god, you're beautiful. And at one point they're supposed to go on a date. Because she gets pissed that Sue spends an extra couple hours, I think, to get laid. And that's where you start to see that it starts taking away from her and she starts to age quicker in certain parts of her body.
Mm.
I think is the idea, right? That she's just taking away what little life she has left.
Yeah. I felt like that happened maybe a little earlier, that like it was just that she chose, instead of following, you know, following up on a guy who was genuinely interested in her and finds her attractive and will be probably interested in her, she chooses to take the substance and have this sort of shallow existence instead. Like she's too coward to actually be real.
But she calls him up later in the movie, right? To go on a date after. So she sees that parts of her body have aged because Sue spent a couple of extra hours. And her finger is all fucked up and old.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this long scene where she's getting ready to go to some Italian restaurant that he said, like, oh, 8 p.m., blah, blah, blah. And that's when she has that meltdown in the mirror. She realizes she thinks she's ugly. And
mm-hmm.
There's actually a bunch of cool shots. I will give it that, too. There's, like, a lot of great cinematography.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she's about to, like, leave and she sees in the doorknob her face. And her face looks goofy, like, you know, faces do when you look at, like,
perspective, reflective perspective, yeah.
You see that most of the time when you go to a urinal. I know not everybody's going to know what that's like, but like if you look down at the thing and it's shiny, your face looks all morphed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I thought that was great too. She's like losing it and Demi Moore's just like giving it her all.
Yeah.
Which I'm wondering if this movie like started hitting really like close to home for her. Like, if, because I know they're not married, but she still takes care of Bruce Willis as Bruce Willis is going through his dementia.
Mm-hmm. I felt like she's always been indebted to him, right? She, even when she was remarried and to Ashton Kutcher.
They had like a very healthy relationship, I felt like.
At least publicly. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Because even like in the private paparazzi photos, they'd see like Bruce Willis would hang out with Demi and his kids with Ashton Kutcher, and it wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I mean, because probably for his daughters, I'm assuming they.
Yeah, Rumor and the other one.
Spoiler, or I don't know. That's what her name is. But yeah. All right.
Very small cast.
It ended up being pretty, yes. As far as important characters, yeah. It was mainly the majority of the movies just Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley.
So. And the production, like the art aspect of the movie, I thought was fucking pretty fantastic. Like really cool stuff. Very long hallways.
Mm-hmm.
Which are clearly set pieces, but
yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it's like aesthetically, like Kubrick inspired, obviously, right? Just The Shining.
I also want to say, like, Refn, what's his name? Remember,
sure.
Drive, and
yeah, I would say that.
Demon, and,
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a little bit of that there. Over stylized
Benny Benassi music videos, yeah,
sure. I mean, it definitely pulls from a lot of other movies, its influences, yeah. So.
I mean, the end is Carrie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And The Fly.
Freaked.
And Freaked. More importantly, Alex Winter's Freaked. All right.
And oh, yeah. And quite obvious, there's like a heavy society.
Heavily, yeah. Influence as well, yeah.
I feel like every time we saw a shot of a butt, which there's a lot, it reminded me of, like, I'm just waiting for a face to be there.
Yeah, if you're uncomfortable looking at butts, then this is not the movie for you.
There's a lot of butts.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to go into spoilers?
Wait! No. Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. Elizabeth Sparkle is Sue.
Like
the beginning movie was.
No, like I love the idea that the beginning of the movie that they show as a metaphor, right? That she gets her star and then she gets it through time and through weather and whatever. You kind of see that that's kind of a metaphor for her career, that she's now towards closer to the end because there's like cracks in it and everything. And I liked as a visual image or whatever that they return to it at the end of this movie after, you know, Sue has taken advantage and has stayed in the body for months after taking so much of her whatever thing that to refill her from Elizabeth, which ages her. We learn from one scene that I think she stays, like you said, like a little bit longer, and it kind of, the consequences are on Elizabeth, not really Sue yet. And so she ends up saying like, well, I want to stay in this body for now. She ends up staying for months and months and completely like
3 months. Yeah.
3 months. And that leads to like the scene everyone talks about. Oh, this is like the most gonzo scene. I can't believe it. This is the greatest fucking thing I ever seen. I was like, no, it's okay. It's pretty cool, but it's
cool, but it was giving me fucking, oh my God, what's her name? Angelica Houston in
right. There is a point where Elizabeth does, before any of that returns, and she strikingly looks like Angelica Houston from Witches, yes. With the bald head and like the clearly like prosthetic makeup and hunch and all these like deformities and yeah.
I did like the droopy titties were
the droopy titties, which play a big significance in this movie, especially when they go turn into that weird like formation or whatever. But
you know, now that you bring that up, which I mean I was aware, but I didn't connect. A lot of the dialogue focuses on like, oh, women's tits and blah blah blah. Like, oh, too bad her. What do you say? Her boobs weren't on her face for this other actress auditioning for something.
Mm-hmm.
And we do see boobs, but gee golly, there is a lot of shots of butts, just butts all over the place.
Yeah.
There's like one shot where it's like, so yeah, every 7 days they have to switch back, and at this point, this is Sue had run out of the spinal fluid. And calls the thing and they're like, oh, you need a refresh. That's why you're supposed to like switch every 7 days. She's like, oh no. So in desperation to not die, she runs and switches back to her old body.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's like a shot of like showing her like prosthetic decrepit butt. And then it switches to like this guy that Sue's sleeping with and his like hairy butt. And I was like, what is the symbolism here? Just showing butts all over the place.
Oh yeah, well, Tina Belcher directed it, so
that I would watch over and over again.
She has a butt bank where she remembers all of these things. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, where were so?
Yeah.
I think Sue's character and trying to come up with a solution decides to take the one thing she only was supposed to take once, but there's like a little bit of a vial left, so she injects it. So
sorry, before we get that far, is that a spoiler?
Yeah, we're on spoilers.
Oh. Because we also, once Elizabeth goes back and she's very like Angelica Houston and witches,
right?
She is like, fuck this, and there's a needle called Termination. Also, like, the packaging for everything was so fresh and so cool looking.
Like,
it looked like something you legitimately got in the mail and be like, oh, this is fancy.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to terminate Sue, and then last second decides not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was confused because like she had already injected most of that shit into her.
I think she did it because she still wanted that lifestyle. I think she's the most telling part of that is when she says like, I hate myself. She says something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're the only good thing about me now.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, she injects the termination fluid and she's almost put the whole thing in.
The fuck is that?
it's because I'm doing this. Sorry. For context at home, I was giving a thumbs up randomly and a thumbs up thought bubble popped up in my head for whatever reason. Anyway, Riverside FM for you guys. Nobody, like, she injects most of that fluid into her and then just leaves a little bit in the vial.
Mm.
And Sue's still fine. But do you think that's why she started falling apart quicker? I don't know.
Yeah, because she wasn't supposed to use the thing again because there's only one shot. But I guess there was enough there where she was able to take it again and she ends up, you know, births that weird, disgusting thing.
Not that part. I'm still talking about Elizabeth. Like, Demi Moore is trying to press the termination syringe into her. Like, there it goes.
How come mine doesn't do that? Does mine do that? Mine doesn't do that.
The termination syringe.
Uh-huh.
And doesn't quite pump her full all the way, and then she decides to like try to save Sue by doing the transfer process again. But this time they're both aware.
Yes.
And they get in like this fight where Sue for some reason has like superhuman strength. And is like kicking Demi Moore. She's flying across the fucking room and eventually smashes Demi Moore's head.
Uh-huh.
Until she dies. But that's not the end of Demi Moore, which I thought was pretty weird. But she's dead. Like, old Elizabeth is dead. And Sue is like, well, time to get ready for the thing. So I'm wondering if she didn't have enough stuff in her and if the termination fluid was like killing her slowly.
I would say so, yeah. I think it's a poor choice from both sides of her, right? Like, she didn't do enough of the termination. They did enough of the, she only used some of the one shot to make this goopy, gross, society-ish mesh of a person.
Like several people, I think, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Like Elizabeth was like the back, the mouth, and the the arms, and she had body parts falling out of everywhere.
But there is a pretty fun scene where it's both Demi Moore and Margot Qualley as that big, what was it called?
It
Monstra Sue or something like that is what they named it.
Yeah,
the title card game.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like getting ready for this New Year's Eve thing that she's supposed to be hosting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was fun. Like she's like putting on earrings, but like this new version is also so self-absorbed that it doesn't realize that it's a monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is like trying to put on makeup, trying to curl her hair, but the hair just falls right off, and she just looks at it confused. And then she goes to this very large old photo of Demi Moore, smashes it open and cuts out the head, which would be about the same size as her head, and tries to super glue it on her face.
Yeah.
And then the thing that trips me out is like she goes back to the studio, knocks on the door, and some guy answers and goes like, "Oh, good, there you are. We've been waiting for you." And it's like, how do you not notice this?
Yeah.
This has got a fucking arm hanging off the back of their back. Like,
yeah. I'm going to check that up, that one instance of like that not happening, that she imagined it. Because then she's immediately...
That makes sense.
Yeah, because then the next scene, I think, is when they like, she imagines that they're all looking for her or some shit, right?
Yes.
And then she ends up going on stage and saying something. I forget what the purpose of the whole thing. It's like some New Year's Eve party or something.
Yes, it's for like New Year's Eve, dropping the ball, like
type of thing. Or was it Christmas? I don't remember. It's one or the other.
No, it was New Year's Eve. I think it was a play on like whenever you watch Times Square dropping the ball or...
Gotcha. Yeah.
Casey Kasem back in the day. There's a lot of like very 80s, 90s influences in this movie.
Yeah. And she ends up revealing herself to this crowd full of lookers and just like, what happens? Like a boob falls out of her arm or something?
Well... Yeah, the Demi Moore picture mask that she put on her face falls off, and they're like, oh, she's a monster. And then out of, like, her shoulder, she gives birth to a boob.
Yeah.
Like, it comes out of her like she's giving birth to a boob, and it flops on the ground, and everybody starts screaming.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And then the thing that, like, really threw me was people's reaction immediately was to start attacking her.
Yeah.
Just like started like what happens? Like her hand gets chopped off. Like she's falling apart too.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming. But I think it really starts with one guy swings, like people keep hitting her, and then one guy swings a microphone stand and it hits her head and her head explodes.
Mm-hmm.
But then all that happens is like another weirder head starts growing out of the mic, and she's trying to grab something. How does she kill that guy? She kills the guy somehow. I don't remember, but like her hand gets chopped off, and then she just starts like gore concert style spraying blood at everybody.
Mm.
That's what it reminded me of. I was like, this is turning into a fucking Cannibal Corpse
music video. Outtakes, yeah.
And then they started playing something very death metal-y.
Mm. Yeah.
And then I was also like, it was again giving like gore live performance.
Yeah.
And everybody's covered in blood, and then she eventually makes it out and she's walking towards her star, right?
Yeah, I think we returned to the shot we opened with, which was like her star, and then she like just
collapses
and turns into more goo.
Yeah, just kind of sort of explodes, and then the Demi Moore face is like a very John Carpenter's The Thing, except without legs, just like
me. Yeah.
So like her face is always pointing up, but like her whatever is on the back of the face, kind of like hands, but like mushy hands, start crawling towards the star, and she lays on the star, and she feels happy for a second, and then she turns into liquid.
Because she's able to look up, right? She looks up and sees what we our point of view or whatever, and then they sweep her away, and that's kind of the end of the movie.
Because she's a washed up star. Get it?
Why? Goopy washed up.
That's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of these things were so on the nose. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I liked that callback from the beginning of the movie. I thought it was there, but there is a lot of like you said, on the nose references, or not references, but like, you know, allusions to references and stuff like that to it. So,
and I think maybe if, and I know I say this about a lot of movies, maybe if Maxine hadn't come out this year, because there's a lot of similarities when it comes to like what people want in Hollywood, what's important in Hollywood, blah 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 blah. And it's like, okay, we've seen this. We know these.
Right. Yeah. I can.
I'd rather focus on one of these things being evil, you know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's a set. They're doing kind of like, they're kind of like talking about the same topics, but they're going about it very differently, I would say.
Yes. Drastically differently. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, you're right. It is like about how, ooh, Hollywood's evil. Hollywood's bad. Hollywood's superficial. So, yeah.
Women are objectified in Hollywood. And I'm like,
what?
I hate to tell you this, but it's women are objectified in America. Yay.
Yeah. And they had it their way. They have even less things, less rights and things to say. But, yeah. Yeah, okay. Do you have any other thoughts before you rate it?
No. I do think the movie's still worth a watch.
I think that's probably the thing that I'm most surprised by, is I should have liked this more, but I thought it was good.
Sorry, Matt, too.
Yeah. I thought it was fine. It's good. Well, I would recommend this, sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell anybody not to watch it.
Maybe if it was shorter, I'd be like, no, it's a pretty fucking amazing movie. I don't know. Maybe it suffered from pacing issues. I don't know.
I think that's a good call. Yeah. Cause since watching the movie, I've been a little like, yeah, that was okay. But it very well could be its runtime, its indulgent nature of the movie and its topic and stuff. It was good. Not particularly anything inventive, though. Nothing we haven't seen.
Which is unfortunate.
Right.
And it sucks also because the topic, I do want maybe a better take on the topic, because I do like, I think it's a good idea.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah.
It just wasn't done as inventively as you would think or hope for, considering the subject matter, or like what the overall horror aspect of the movie is.
I feel like they barely touched upon the topics that they present in the movie.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's kind of like what you're saying. Like, I wish there would have been a little bit more. Would demean more, just more, like more, because it seems like a lot of the topics they were taking, they approached them all very kind of like surface level, because they just kind of wanted to get to like the more outrageous body horror moments of the movie.
Yeah, like maybe what they should have done is like have a movie about Demi Moore, like a younger version of herself trying to become a famous actress, and it doesn't work out, and then her as an older person and takes the substance, and then the duplicate kills her and then goes to Hollywood to try to make it as an actress, and then there's like a serial killer on the loose, and you find out that it's her father.
Spoilers.
Oh shit. Anyway, for people at home, I've become a big Mia Goth fan, and I'm
yeah,
just a fan of the ex Maxine Pearl trilogy.
Not me. But so let's. But alrighty, why don't we go ahead and rate this, John? How many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give the substance. Six sexy, spooky bones.
That's more or less where I was. I would say I'd give it a 7. I did enjoy it. And I think there is, you know,
there's something.
I just didn't.
Since I don't know. I mean, I might rewatch it with somebody, but I don't think I'll go past 2 watches. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I can see myself already going like, oh, let's, I know what's going to happen. Let's just get to that part.
Okay. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. We'll be right back.